It is 22 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning. It being a Tuesday morning, Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he's got a winery and he practices the fine art of biochemistry there, and also a member of the board of Creation Moments. Don, we haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. How you doing?
Actually doing quite well, thank you.
Yeah.
Went to a couple of conferences between the time we last talked. So one was a wine and grape conference in Dallas, mm-hmm. called the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association Conference. And then the other one was the National Religious Broadcasters Conference. So they were back to back.
Uh-huh. Was it time well spent? I've got to ask.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot at TWGA, as it's called.
Yeah.
Got some more tips, tasted some more wines, different types of wines that we hadn't tasted before. Talked to a lot of people, and yeah, it was good. It was a timely thing to do, and good to get away for a bit. And then the National Religious Broadcasters Conference is always a treat. There's always a lot of things going on.
Well, you go there on behalf of the Sharing Group. Tell us about that ministry.
Well, Sharing International is, of course, directed by Chuck Pollock, who has been in the broadcasting industry for a number of years and who has taught broadcasting for a number of years as well. But he takes volunteer broadcasters, whether it's radio or television, depending on what the area needs, and he goes into Africa and various parts of the world and puts together training seminars, mm-hmm. and the training seminars are free to the indigenous peoples who have a heart to put on a radio station, haven't done it before, then goes in and trains them how to do it, everything from the technical side to even putting on a news broadcast. So. Raising money.
Do they do secular as well as Christian radio, or is it just Christian radio?
No, it's Christian radio.
Okay,
it's all Christian radio.
Alrighty, yeah, that's a worthy goal, and I know Chuck and wish them all well. Hope you said hi for me there at the conference. And today, though, we're talking about something else again, and Genesis chapter 7 makes mention of this, and we happened to come across this story in Science and Tech the other day. And Don and we have talked about this in a couple of years ago, I think. In fact, this article refers to the research that we were using then to indicate that there's water under our feet. I mean, we all know there are aquifers, and we can look around and see the water on the surface of the earth. But, Don, this is very enlightening for a lot of people around the globe, isn't it?
Well, it should be, because it points to the fact that, there's a whole lot more water under there than we thought. Now, under there isn't just a foot or so under your feet, or even, 100 feet under your feet.
Mm-hmm.
we're talking about, miles, 10 miles or so, if not deeper, in the lower parts of the upper mantle and the inner mantle, right at the transition zone. And what was discovered, what's new this time, is that we actually have evidence of this water trapped in diamonds.
Well, it's been stated that the kind of theoretically that the water's there, because there have been, I don't know whether it's groundproofing radar or what they can use that deep, but there was research a couple of years ago that pointed to the presence of vast amounts of water under there. And I can't help but mention Genesis 7, because the images in your mind that conjures up, water gushing forth out of the earth at the same time it's falling on the earth during the flood description there in Genesis chapter 7, it was always a big question. How could that happen? We could think of water spouts. We can think of the ocean sloshing around with earthquakes and violent gyrations of the earth itself, perhaps. But water from the center of the earth, really? Well, apparently so.
Well, water from certainly deep in the earth, and Genesis 7, actually 7:11, mentions it. It says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month of the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened. So we know about the windows, but we often forget about the fountains of the deep. And what in the world is that referring to? Well, apparently, it's referring to the fact that the earth obviously had water, you know, under the surface, and a great deal of water under the surface, and, of course, the water in the heavens or the sky, you know, which we know is rain today, but there was a great deal of water, enough to flood the surface of the earth. Now, the earth at the time, we've talked about before, was, you know, Pangaea, or one earth mass, as opposed to the continents that we see today. And it's a well-known theory about continents adrift, except for the time frame for the drifting, that this one big landmass broke apart at some point in the past history of the earth, and thereby created the continents we have today. But the main question here is, where did all this water come from? And is there yet even more water under the great deep? And apparently these folks from the University of Nevada in Las Vegas, Oliver, I guess
it's an interesting last name, Janauer?
Janauer. Janauer, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he was doing some studies, other types of studies, and looking at diamonds, and found that we got water droplets inside the diamonds, which wasn't expected, by the way, because they were looking for carbon dioxide. Their research was being funded, as most research in geology or geoscience these days is being funded, to look for climate change. And so he was looking for CO2, and lo and behold, he finds water. And he actually examined diamonds from all around the world. And he was surprised, as well as the scientific community should be surprised, that these diamonds from all around the world showed water, and were from great depths and what's called the transition zone in the Earth's mantle. So that supported the earlier theory that there's a lot of water under the surface of the Earth, and deep within the surface of the Earth, and so much so that there's three times more water under the Earth apparently than there is on the surface.
Sounds, that's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water. But if you go back to Genesis, you know, and you go back to chapter 1, and that was chapter 7 we were reading from earlier, but if you go back to chapter 1, it says that, and God, you know, called forth the dry land to appear out of the water. So, you know, perhaps the history of the planet is even more complex in that we should perhaps read Genesis a little more literally to figure out that, hey, you know what, this sphere that we call Earth was at one time probably primarily water, and God called the minerals and stuff forth, which created, of course, the mantle and the dry land, which at that time was, like I said, one mass, which we call, Pangaea, to come forth. So it's not surprising then that we should have a bunch of water under the earth. And in fact, it is a necessary requirement to explain the magnetic dipole that we have in Earth. You cannot explain it any other way. And there's been many, many theories about this, but the one that holds the best ground, if you will.
Well, the one that holds water.
Is the one that holds water.
Yeah.
That says that the Earth, and not only the Earth, the planets as well, show this and show that you couldn't get a magnetic field that you know the planets or the Earth has without assuming that these planets, including the Earth, contained not only a bunch of water but were primarily water, and then out of the water came the minerals and stuff that formed the land.
You know, what continues to amaze me is how hand in hand Genesis works with science to reveal truth. And we've talked about Genesis many times, not being a scientific document, but being an historical document. And the information in it is no less reliable, certainly, than whatever science can develop. And you put the two together, and you get some amazing completed stories. It's like the puzzle comes together. One of the researchers, Mr. Jacobson, here at the end of the article. By the way, the link to this article is now in the chat window at Broken Road Radio, so you can read this. It's a short article and easy to read. He says if the stored water wasn't there, it would be on the surface of the earth, and mountaintops would be the only land poking out. He's explaining that and talking to his interviewer at the New Scientist. So, and this is a special kind of water, isn't it? It's not just regular H2O.
Well, from their seismic analysis, which is what he did and others had done, was that this is bound water. It's bound water in the minerals in the form of hydroxy radicals. Of course, you got to have hydrogen around somewhere too. But it's the hydroxy component of the minerals, and so they're super, if you will, super hydrated mm-hmm. with the water that's available. So it's bound up water. It's not necessarily free water. Had that the minerals come to the surface, of course the water would be released, and you'd have a bunch of water. But at least this is what their
analysis
kind of
shows. Well, wouldn't it be the pressure and the heat that's deep inside the earth that keeps it in chemical combination with the minerals, and that maybe surface pressure is what would release it? Is that how that works?
Yes, it's under extreme amount of pressure, and of course, 1,000 degrees or so, or maybe even higher in the region, that they are finding evidence of this, and so it's bound up. And because of the amount of water that's there, it actually helps to molten the minerals, and so you get lava, basically because of the amount of water that's there. And then, of course, when it comes to the surface, the water is released, and then you get, the molten rock that we see on the surface of the earth.
So the water is really an essential ingredient to keeping the earth stable in the way we see it today.
And to keeping it stable, to keeping the fluid layer under the mantle, for example. And, basically holding, helping mm-hmm. to hold the earth together as we know it, and giving it the properties that it has in order for it to support life. Oh, isn't that amazing mm-hmm. that we would have such a system, complex system, that would everything that is about the system is there to support life as, of course, as we know it today. So it's amazing discovery, and this was the first time actually that they brought up a mineral, in this case diamond. Of course, we know that diamond is one of the hardest substances, that actually contained the water that they could say, aha, here's even more proof. Here is not seismic kind of reflections, if you will, echoes from that surface, and then you're trying to mathematically describe what those echoes mean. This is physical evidence that shows that there is water in the minerals, and here's the hardest mineral we know, and it actually contains the water that we can that we can then analyze here on the Earth's surface.
I'm assuming here that there is some new technology in terms of the, our ability to examine what's in a diamond that revealed this. Otherwise, it seems like this should have been known many years ago, just with maybe with simple microscopic examination of diamonds. How come this is just now coming out?
Well, because I think it's probably been there, you know, for years and years and years, but it's one of those things that we just haven't looked. Now, by the fact that he was looking for CO2 in the diamond, you, spectrophotometrically, I'm assuming, or with a process called nuclear magnetic resonance, and I don't know what technique they use, but that's what I would probably, you know, use, one of those techniques to look inside, and it's not a destructive method, but you would see the signature of the water molecule. Now, he was looking for the signature of the CO2 molecule, doesn't find CO2, but finds water.
What does this say about global warming, then?
Well, it doesn't support global warming, so I don't know if he's going to get another research project because it's not supporting the, you know, the global warming theory. But it does say a lot about Genesis.
Boy, that it does.
And the historical accuracy of Genesis.
That it does, and I assume because a diamond is so hard and it's impervious to almost to most things that man can devise, that's how the water doesn't convert to regular water. When the diamond finally works its way to the surface.
Yes, and it's entrapped in the closed, obviously the closed cells of the diamond, which is, as you know, is carbon. So it's very, 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 very compressed carbon under very high temperatures, which gives you the diamond in the first place.
You know, you've got a winery there. Imagine if you could develop the process for crushing those diamonds. And collecting that water out of the diamonds. It'd be an expensive wine, but a unique wine.
Oh, very, very unique. Yes, we could put diamonds on the ground and just water the vines with the diamond.
Oh, I like that idea. Hey, there's see, I knew you'd come up with a way to do it. I just knew you would. It's a great article. I recommend that you read it, everybody. The link is in the window at the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. Talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and member of the Board of Creation Moments. I do want to mention their website, creationmoments.com. There you will find just scads of evidence. I don't know how big a scad is, but they've got several of them there at Creation Moments. Evidence, it's scientific evidence that supports the biblical creation story. You ought to pay them a visit at creationmoments.com. Don, we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, very good. I guess you're settled in, I'm supposed.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
All righty.